You're listening to The Cash Podcast, creating affluence, success, and happiness with your financial surgeon, Adam Koch, president and portfolio manager at Libertas Wealth Management Group at LibertasWealth.com.
Happy clearance sale, everybody. I don't mean to make light of a stock market correction, obviously. Come to think of it, the NASDAQ has officially crossed, or at least last week, it crossed into crash territory at this juncture, which is defined by Ned Davis to be a drop of more than 20%. So the NASDAQ's there. It's already dropped more than 20% this past week, but I digress. My point is, times like these don't last forever. And there's currently, anyway, not enough evidence that suggests, at least in my analysis, that we're going to see a huge all-out market collapse through the rest of this year. Now, nobody can predict the future, obviously, but you know, if Putin won't let up and proceeds to invade Poland or elsewhere, different story, obviously. If China decides to invade Taiwan, again, totally different story. However, the way we manage our clients' hard-earned retirement dollars at our office is not by worrying about every potential negative threat to the point where we're fearful and terrified of being invested. In fact, if you did that, you'd never be invested because there's always something. I was going to say something, but there's always more than one thing, several things to be afraid of. So no, instead, you know, we have different strategies, you know, some that are aggressive, some that are conservative, some that stay in the market all of the time, but rotate out of the weakening investments and rotate into strengthening ones. We have model strategies that not only rotate in and out of weakness and strength, but they have an additional, more conservative trend following component that can get us out of the market. For instance, these models right now, the trend following models, have anywhere between 50-55% up to as much as 65-70% cash right now, meaning they're kind of sitting on the sidelines. These models are waiting for things to get better before we invest. Now, that could mean that we pay higher prices if things just scream northward. It also could mean that if things get worse, that those models are already positioned to avoid such a potential all-out collapse. But these are, you know, whether you're in the aggressive model or a more conservative model, those trend following models, that's the whole point. They're aimed to avoid catastrophic crashes, or as I like to say, they try to avoid the tornadoes when the tornado sirens go off. While the previous models I mentioned, the strategic static models, the buy and hold models, they're just designed to weather the storm. So you rotate in and out of weakness and strength, but as the storm comes through, tornadoes or not, you're going to weather the storm. All right. Anyway, I've already gone off the rails here, but the point of this podcast is twofold. First, I want to talk about maxing out your retirement accounts while you still can before the tax filing deadline, if you're eligible to do so, of course. And then two, trying to avoid being afraid of this market and instead taking advantage of the clearance sale that's going on right now. In fact, I'll have a third item actually for retirees only that I'll finish up with today. But before we get started, as always, just a few housekeeping items here. First off, thank you so much for joining us as always. My hope is for you to learn a little bit more on each and every one of these episodes so that you become more successful, wealthier, happier, and above all, more educated than you were before you started listening today. So please come back often and subscribe. These episodes are both on iTunes if you're a listener, and YouTube if you're a watcher. You can also follow me on Twitter at Adam Koch and on Instagram at Financial Surgeon. And then last but not least, of course, all links, visuals, charts, and additional educational resources are always available on our website. And today I do have, let's see, one chart and two tables to show. One of the chart I've shown at least twice before, but I think it's so important. But let's go ahead and get started. If you want to refer to that, you can always head to the YouTube page or our website on the podcast page and check it out there. So, quote of the day: compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. He who understands it earns it. He who doesn't pays it. And that's Albert Einstein. So I think that the reason I chose that one today is because we're talking about adding money to our accounts on a consistent basis, taking advantage of retirement plan contribution limits, like IRAs, things of that nature, doing so before the tax filing deadline, and most importantly today, especially, doing so when the market is down, taking advantage of sales, pullbacks, corrections, whatever you want to call them. So let's get into the whole meat of conversation here, starting with maxing out your IRAs. Sorry about the typo there. But we're not talking about this year's IRAs. We're talking about last year's IRAs. Actually, no, it wasn't. Actually, it's not a typo. My apologies. So last year's IRAs, I saw 2021 and immediately thought it was a typo, when in reality, it's we are talking about 2021 IRAs. You can tell I'm recording this early. So anyway, traditional IRAs, $6,000 is how much you can put into a traditional IRA, or if you're over 50 years of age, you can put a $7,000, a total of $7,000. It's called a catch-up contribution. For Roth IRAs, it's the same story. You can put away $6,000 into a Roth IRA up until the April tax filing deadline for last year. Same thing with the traditional IRAs. Or if you're over 50, you can do $7,000. Now, in the case of these IRAs, now, like Roth IRAs, you have to have earned income. Now, for SEP IRAs, it's for business owners only. That's why I say SBO, small business owners only. You can put away up to $58,000 of pre-tax money, so tax-deductible money here, $58,000, or 25% of whatever your income was for last year, but it's whichever is less. So if 25% was less, then that's the dollar amount you're putting away, or $58,000. If you have a single-person 401k, you have to have set it up last year. That's the first rule. So you have to have set it up already. You can't set up a single person or owner K, as we call them here, this year for last year. It's too late for that. But if you do have an owner K, and let's just say you did not put away your contributions last year, so your elective contributions, what you can still potentially do, depending on your situation, your business, your income, is you can still put away profit sharing money up until your tax filing deadline. So that's possible. The contribution limit last year was $19,500, or $26,000 if you're over 50. However, again, if you have an S-Corp, partnership, LLCs, the deadline would be March 15th. That's this week, so it's tomorrow, actually, to put away money for profit sharing. And then if you have a sole proprietorship, single-member LLCs, S and C-Corps, then you would have till April 18th to do so. All right. If you extend your return, by the way, so, and that this counts for everybody, not just sole props, single LLCs and C-Corps, but S-Corps, partnership LLCs as well. If you extend your return out till later on the year, you know, October, September, then you can always contribute for your profit sharing later as well. Now, let's just say you don't have an IRA. You can always open one up, of course. Let's just say you have an IRA, but you've already maxed it out. Or let's just say you have an IRA, you haven't maxed it out. You don't have a SEP, but you want one. But regardless of the situation, it doesn't even have to be an IRA. But you're just nervous about investing because of what's going on in the world today. And something I want to point out, and this is just an observation through doing this for a living for almost 21 years. And when I say doing this for a living, I mean, you know, helping people with their hard-earned life savings, helping them plan for retirement, get retired, make work optional, and then stay that way. One of the things I've observed over the last 2+ decades is that when markets are at all-time highs, so when markets are really, really high, people shy away from investing their money because just as humans, I think that we just don't like paying high prices for things. It doesn't really matter what it is. It could be a car. It could be dinner if you don't have a coupon. It could be anything at all. We just, in general, as human beings, as consumers, I feel like we naturally are wired to try and find a deal. Or if we're not that person, if we're maybe one of those rare people who don't really care about the deal, at least when it comes to our investments, we really struggle with the idea that, well, I don't want to invest here because the market's at an all-time high. You know, I'd be buying at the top. And it's like, well, that's not necessarily true, because instead, what these people say is that they'd rather wait for the market to fall and then they'll invest their money. Now, when I say wait till it defaults, that could mean a pullback of 5%. It could be a correction of 10 to 15%. It could be a crash. I'm not sure. I don't always ask, I guess, what type of drop they would be looking for before they'd invest their money, but maybe I should start asking. But I think that everybody kind of has their own idea in their head. And, you know, some people say, well, if it dropped 5%, I'd put my money to work. Some people think, well, The market corrects to the tune of about 14% per year on average once a year. Maybe I'll just wait for that correction, then I'll put it to work. Of course, the risk is that that correction will happen at a point that's higher than the all-time high was last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. That's the risk, of course. But everybody has their own definition, I guess, is my point, of where that drop is. Now, when the market does fall, though, this is where it gets really interesting. This is just psychology here. But when the market falls, whatever it is that's causing the drop in value is usually enough to scare investors away from investing then too. So, on one hand, when markets are at all-time highs, people don't want to invest because they don't want to pay the highest prices, or they think because they're at the all-time highs, they can't go higher or they're getting a bad deal. But when the market drops, they don't want to invest then either, typically. And the reason for that is because they're just fearful, and you know what's going on, like for instance right now with Russia and Ukraine, and everything else with inflation, interest rates, you know, Fed potential hike and so on. They have all these things that are on the news that cause them to say, you know what, I'm just not going to do this now. I'm going to wait until things get better. And then things get better and we're back to an all-time high inevitably, and we're back to the cycle again. So when is the best time to invest our money? Well, the answer is either stick to a rule. So if you have a rule for yourself and you say, you know what, I'm going to invest when the market drops 5% next time. That would be one example. I'm going to wait to invest until the market drops 10%. And by the way, the market, depending on which index you use, the S&P's already gone down below 10%. The NASDAQ I mentioned earlier has already gone down below 20%. So you could make that one of your rules. An even better rule is to use time instead of price, because no one can predict what the market's going to do tomorrow, next week, next month, but you can control when you invest the money. So instead of trying to, you know, predict when the market's going to pull back or predict when the market's going to go into a correction, just say, you know what, I'm going to invest. I've got this lump of cash or whatever it is I have sitting around. I'm going to invest a portion of it, whether that's 20% of it over the next 5 weeks, 25% of it over the next 4 months, 33.3% of it, one third of it, over the next 3 months. So you can kind of just say, I'm going to just put this money to work month over month, and I'm going to try and catch the market on a bad day. And when I say catch it on a bad day, what I mean is, of course, you're trying to catch the market when it's on sale, which is exactly what we're looking at today. I wouldn't call it a total clearance sale right now, but it's pretty close. So if you don't, either you got to stick to your rules, make your rules, obviously, and stick to them, or just invest when you have the money to do so and avoid all the, you know, confusion and trying to make things work. Now, I've shown this chart, this next chart, at least twice. I know I've shown this chart, I think, on Twitter. I think I showed this in an article I wrote 2 weeks ago. This is from Funstrat, Tom Lee. And what we're looking at here, for those of you on iTunes, is we're looking at the Vietnam War, the Gulf War, the Afghanistan War, when the air campaign first started after 9/11. The Iraq War, the initial airstrike that took place for the Iraq War when we went into Iraq in March of 2003, and then when Russia invaded Crimea. So we're looking at those last three invasions, we'll call it, and this goes back obviously to Vietnam. So we're talking about the Gulf of Tonkin incident, 1964, and when you look back at these last five instances, in all five situations, when the invasion occurred, the market was at or very much near a bottom and never looked back. The only exception on this chart on here, on these five charts, is the Afghanistan War. We'll call it the air campaign after 9/11. And I would argue that when compared to the Gulf War, you know, the U.S. intervention in the Gulf, so call it Desert Storm, which was projected, we knew it was happening, it was not on our soil, it was over in the Middle East. Vietnam War, projected, we knew it was happening, not on our soil. Iraq War, same story, not on our soil, we knew it was happening. And then Crimea, we kind of knew that was happening as well, again, not on our soil. The difference with the Afghanistan War after 9/11 was we were already in the midst of the dot-com bubble. We were already in the midst of tech stocks crashing. And then we had 9/11, which just pretty much put a cherry on top, and that just made things much, much, much worse. So when the invasion occurred, obviously, we saw a market bottom occur just in the 2 months, actually a month prior. And then the market bounced nicely. Now, it did continue heading down because of all the other things going on in the world at that time, but it wasn't because of what was going on in the world from the standpoint of geopolitical events. It was because of what was going on here in the U.S. with our situation with tech stocks. So that's the only bad chart here, I guess, is my point. And the other four charts tell us that when these invasions occur, usually it's not going to get much worse. Now, that doesn't mean it can't get worse. I want to be really clear here because I don't want to go on record, 6 months from now when Russia decides to invade Poland saying, hey, Adam, you said it wasn't going to happen. You know, I don't have a direct line to Putin and I don't speak Russian, so I have no idea what he's going to do. I'm just, all we have is history to work on here. And when we work with that history, we're trying to basically stack the deck in our favor. You know, try to sift through the minutiae, try to sift through the noise, and try to put ourselves in the best position to profit from these situations so that we become successful and we don't fall behind. Now, if we look at the next table here, I'll talk you through it again for those of you that are listening on iTunes. This is a really great table. What we're looking at is midterm election years. I think that the market has all but forgotten about COVID and the fact that we're in a midterm election year because of what's going on in Ukraine. But in midterm election years, when you go back to 1950 and you look at every intra-year pullback or correction, the average correction or average, we'll just say average correction, going back to 1950 is 17.1%. So midterm election years have the worst, on average, the worst drawdown intra-year of the four-year election cycle. So we can kind of expect that. Well, we've kind of already seen it. Now, could it get worse? Yes, of course it could get worse, because I always make the joke about the guy who drowned in the river that was an average of 4 feet deep, and that's the joke. You know, the rivers can be an average of 4 feet deep, but they could be 12 feet in the middle. So this is just averages we're talking about. You know, the worst was 1974. And then the best situation here was 4.4% drop in 1954 and 1958. So that was the mildest correction or pullback, we'll call it. So the average is 17.1%. But here's the kicker. So if the average drop, the average intra-year drop in the S&P 500 since 1950 in midterm election years is 17.1%, that's a drop of 17.1% intra-year, the average return a year later off the bottom is 32.3%. The worst rebound a year later was 8.7, and the best, 57.7. So again, we're talking averages here, so we're not going to expect 32.3 on the dot. But my point again is to say here, look, we've already seen a pretty big drop in the market this year. In fact, we started the year with the fastest 16-day 11% drop in U.S. history. So while I can't predict the future, my gut tells me, my hope is that we've kind of seen the bottom already. I think we just need to see the market continue to hold these most recent lows, and we'll see what happens. But all we can control is our emotions and how we're positioning our money to benefit not only based on these events here, but to react and adjust to what's going on in the market environment, in the market landscape. And I'll finish with that in a second here. But what about rates? You know, because we have Jerome Powell's coming on the horn here soon. And what I mean by that is Jerome Powell has said that there's going to be a big rate hike this March. And he said that, you know, back in tail end of 2021. And now we're almost there. So then the question becomes, is there really going to be a rate hike? Well, I'm thinking there will be. How big will it be? I think it'll be smaller than we think. But I also think there's a possibility he doesn't raise rates at all. But let's just say he raises rates. So when we look back to 1983, and we look at the first interest rate hike by the Fed, the performance of the S&P 500 3 months later was higher half the time for an average return of a positive 0.7%. So we could just call that a wash, negligible, 3 months later. But 6 months later, the S&P was higher six out of eight times, sorry, took me a second to count there, with an average return of 6.1%. And then a year later, the market was up an average of 9.2%, with only 1 year where it was down, and that's because 1 year after the interest rate hike in 1986, we had a drop in the market in 1987. So, but these numbers don't look bad. I don't think that we should be so scared of interest rates going up. And I guess that kind of brings me back to the whole fear discussion. You know, we don't want to invest our money because of what's going on in the Ukraine. We don't want to invest our money because of what Russia might do. We don't want to invest our money because inflation's high. We don't want to invest our money because interest rates are going up. We don't want to invest our money because Jerome Powell might raise the Fed funds rate. I mean, it's like, how many things are we going to come up with to give us reason not to invest our money, only to find out that we end up getting holding the bag a year, 2 years, 3 years later, wishing we would have just put that money to work? And I guess that's why I'm sharing all this with you today, on a day when my original goal was just to encourage people to save into their retirement accounts if they can, max out their IRAs. If they're business owners, max out your SEP IRAs, profit sharing contributions if possible, things like that. But then, you know, we have these current events going on right now, and I thought it was important to illustrate that, you know, kind of like the article I wrote, I mentioned a book that I've used to read my boys, and it's a Halloween book. It's called Mouse's First Halloween. And in this book, in each page, you know, the mouse would see something that would look really scary, like a big shadow, and then they would find out it's just a little tiny stick figure doll or something. And the end of the page would always say, "See, not so scary after all." And I feel like that's what we as adults need in this world today, is to see that, you know, sometimes maybe consider the remote possibility, just consider it, that what we're seeing on our phones, on the internet, on the radio, what we hear and what we watch on the news is maybe trying to scare us. And maybe that's how they keep us watching. Just consider that as a possibility. So maybe it's not so scary after all. Now, I promised I'd finish talking about retirees, because retirees aren't putting money away. They're not maxing out their IRAs. They're not maxing out SEP IRAs. They're not putting money into owner Ks unless they own a business, which I guess, you know, it's always possible to retire and start a business, right? But what about distributions? You know, if I'm retired, one of the things I think that you can check when markets are going into pullbacks and corrections is just to double check your distribution rate, your withdrawal rate. If you don't know what it is, find out. Super easy math. All you do is you take your total withdrawal rate per month, gross. And this is not your net take home after tax, by the way. So if you're having taxes withheld, like the vast majority of our clients who take money from their qualified retirement accounts, meaning pre-tax retirement accounts, what we do is we withhold taxes for them, send those taxes to the IRS just like you would on a paycheck, so that they don't have to worry about a tax surprise come April 15th each year. So if you are checking your distribution rate and you're trying to do this math, make sure you're looking at the gross amount that you receive before taxes are withheld, not after tax. So you take that gross amount, you divide it into your liquid net worth. Liquid net worth is all of your investments, your cash, liquid money. So you would not include your house, your cars, things like that, hard assets. So you take that monthly amount, you multiply it times 12 to get an annual amount, of course. So monthly gross withdrawal rate, multiply it times 12, divide it into your total liquid net worth, and that's your withdrawal rate. And if you start seeing that number, if the number is around 4%, then I think you're probably in pretty good shape. Now, I'm not going to give blanket advice here to everybody who's listening or watching, because that would make no sense, but you're probably in pretty good shape if it's 4%. If it's getting up to the 5%, 6% range, that's when I start getting a little bit concerned. So at our office, one of the things we do for those of our clients who are retired and they're taking withdrawals or not, is we provide them with three withdrawal rates. One that's conservative using one equation, one that's more moderate that uses a different equation, and then an aggressive withdrawal rate that we aren't really comfortable with, but we use it just for illustrative purposes. So what you can do then is when these inevitable, because they are inevitable, tough times in the market arrive, and it starts to cause unbearable anxiety, if it does. If it doesn't, then there's maybe nothing to do. But if it's causing you unbearable anxiety, something you could always do is to reduce the volatility in your portfolio is to temporarily lower your withdrawal rate. I know a lot of people with COVID, with these lockdowns, with not traveling as much. They just haven't been spending as much money. But I do know that there's some folks out there that have continued to take the same withdrawal rate for the last 3 years, or the same withdrawal amount, even though they haven't been spending all the money. So keeping more money at work, I think long term, that can help. And then just keep in mind, the market always has and always will climb a wall of worry. And that's what we were talking about earlier with the, you know, there's always going to be something to be afraid of. I could give you a list of reasons that you should not have invested your money over the course of the last 10, 20 years. And if you would have avoided every opportunity, and see, there I am, I'm kind of brainwashed, I guess. When I say brainwashed, I'm brainwashed to think of it as an opportunity. But when you look at every one of those concerns or apocalypses, is that a word? Apocalypses? apocalypses du jour. So when we run into these apocalypse du jours, I don't know if I'm saying this right at all. The English majors are correcting me. You can send me an email or shoot me a text message. But anyway, when these terrible events come that scare us, there's always going to be another one next week. There's always going to be another one next month. There's always going to be something that scares us out of investing our money. And then if you haven't put together a financial plan, retirement plan, estate plan, most investment problems that you worry about, that people worry about, can be fixed with a thoroughly analyzed and stress-tested retirement plan, or if you're already retired, a retirement income plan that shows you you're going to be okay, you're not going to run out of money. And if you don't have a plan, you need to get one. I mean, it is a fact. People, I'm telling you, this is not criticism. People who invest their money but don't have a plan are investing and hoping they have enough. And hope is not a strategy. So I don't care if you've got $250,000 to your name or $25 million. Everybody needs a plan. The $250,000 person is going to have different concerns, growth concerns, withdrawal rate concerns, income concerns. The $25 million client is going to have concerns like tax concerns, estate planning concerns, death tax concerns, charitable planning needs, things like that. So everybody's a fingerprint. Everybody has their own needs. But the bottom line is that everybody does need a plan. So if you don't have one, get one. And of course, if you're not one of our clients, then you know we offer the opportunity to go through our financial planning process at no cost, unless you're somebody who likes managing money on your own and you want to do all your own money management, in which case we charge a flat hard dollar fee for financial plans for those of you who love the market, love analysis, love research, and love doing all your own investing. So that is where we're going to end today. Be sure to share this episode with your friends and family if you think they'd benefit. And if you'd like to discuss your personal situation further, like I mentioned, remember that you never have to be a client to ask a question. So if you'd like to set up an intro call, email us at info@libertaswealth.com or head over to our contact page at libertaswealth.com and you can send us a form message there. Be the first to watch and listen to these episodes by subscribing to this channel both on iTunes and YouTube. And don't forget, if you head over to libertaswealth.com, our website, you can sign up to not only get these updates for the podcasts, but our other screencasts that we do quarterly. And on an impromptu basis, we do videos, we write articles, and all those things could be delivered directly to your inbox whenever they're released. Feel free to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/LibertasWealth. I mentioned earlier, I'm also on Twitter at Adam Koch, as well as Instagram at Financial Surgeon. And as I always say, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of podcasts out there. And you chose to give hours a listen today, so thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Cash Podcast with your financial surgeon, Adam Koch. To see any charts or images that were mentioned in this show, or to check out additional articles, videos, and other educational resources, head over to LibertasWealth.com.